Welcome to The Rink, a hockey podcast by hockey bloggers for hockey fans. I'm James Tapelake Graylian, along with Tom Luongo. This week, we have to talk about Sean Avery. I'm very sorry. But we're also going to talk about the Phoenix Coyotes, the Atlanta Thrashers, the Tampa Bay Lightning, and, yes, the Buffalo Sabres a little. Plus, we have a little surprise for you at the end of the podcast, so stick around for The Rink. This week, there's only one real thing to start off the show with. I think it's almost what everybody was starting off with, except for Versus, of course, who on their Monday night game coverage waited till the very last minute to cover it, and that would have to be Sean Avery. Thank you, Versus. Sean Avery said some dumb things that at any sports bar may be considered humorous. At least to some, but certainly not to the media, about his ex-girlfriends and NHL players who now date them.
Yeah. I saw the YouTube of that thing, and I couldn't believe how blatantly calculated it was. It was like, you know, and he set up this press conference just to, with this big smirk on his face, just to throw this bomb at them and then walk out the door, and I'm speechless. It's sad. I mean, it's almost becoming a cliche right here, but wow,
it was pretty dumb. He walks up. He asks if there are any cameras on. I have something to say. I want to comment about he was absolutely planning on doing this from the get-go, and then walks off from them.
Yeah,
that part amazed me quite a bit. I loved. I don't know if you read his quote unquote apology, which when he walked up to the mics, he could barely compose a complete sentence. But then you read this apology, and it's just eloquent and beautiful, and I now see. And yeah, I'm sorry, Sean Avery didn't write that. His media machine wrote that. And I can't imagine that he feels that much. I can't believe he feels bad for this. I think he feels bad for being caught.
Sean Avery doesn't feel bad about anything he does.
No.
You know, if you look in his eyes, you'll see a sociopath, and he gets off on this, and he enjoys it. And unfortunately, as we've discussed in the past, guys like him keep getting positive reinforcement for this kind of behavior. So he's an attention hog, and he's been successful at getting other players off their game by doing things like this and getting teams focused on him.
And he was successful at getting Phaneuf off his game, and he didn't even wind up playing in the game, of course, because he was suspended before the game. Dion Phaneuf went -3, had one shot on goal, and I think it was 5 missed shots. So Dion Phaneuf was certainly off his game.
Yeah, well, you know, if and to Avery's credit, so you can't beat them on the ice, so you have to beat them in the media / bedroom.
Yeah, and you can't beat them. If you can't beat them, you better wave your stick in front of their face like you did with Martin Brodeur.
If you can't beat them, then you should call people in the stands old, really nasty names. What Macerlane posted up on FanHouse was insane.
And I'm going to say this about Eric Macerlane right now. The biggest difference between Eric Macerlane and any other blogger out there, except for maybe a couple of the other big ones, is that he does the footwork. He does such good footwork to get the story, to talk to the people. All he does half the time is just pick up the phone. He chooses to pick up the phone. Right. I'm not saying he's not a good writer. He's a good writer. He's a really good sports writer. He does. But the fact that he actually goes the extra mile and does all these things is what makes Eric Macerlane an excellent blogger.
Yeah, it makes him phenomenal. And proud to be associated with him in any way. It was insane. I read that thing, and I said, oh, my God. And why he wasn't, you know, why he wasn't removed from the league after that incident, I don't know. I mean, it's one thing to say that, you know, hockey players aren't angels and all of this stuff, and I've heard all that stuff before, but you know, so?
Well, the thing with,
mean
with
we can't,
him,
you know, grow up.
A lot of times he would do stuff on the ice or away from microphones. You may see some, you know, some things said back and forth, but you don't know what. Right. There was an incident where he was accused of making a racist statement on the ice, sure. But it was on the ice and nobody had a mic on him. Nobody was near with a mic. Nobody knew. And so most of the time things with Avery become he said, she said. And this kind of was the opportunity of the league to actually say, hey, we have the evidence. We're going to do something about it.
Well, more importantly, if he says it on the ice, it stays on the ice. It's okay if he wants to go up to Dion Phaneuf and say something like that to Dion Phaneuf, mm-hmm. and then take his chances that Dion Phaneuf doesn't then just immediately knock his head off.
Yeah.
But to do so in the locker room with the cameras and the smirk and the lights and everything else in order to do that, that's just beyond cowardly mm-hmm. nonsense. And I don't give a damn what Mike Milbury says about the pansification of the NHL. So many commenters on this thing I saw in so many blogs just picked up on his little pansification rant on the hot stove a couple of weeks ago. So it's crap. It's you don't want people in the game representing the game that way. I don't care. I mean, just because was Milbury trying to exonerate himself for jumping into the stands 30 years ago after a fan who threw a beer on him or something? Is that what he's trying to do? I don't know.
God bless YouTube. You can go back and watch it at any time.
Exactly. Now we can catch not only catch Mike Milbury at his worst, though. Honestly, we didn't get to see the inside of his office when he was GM of the Islanders, because I think that was totally when he was at his worst. But we can also catch, you know, all the politicians and their lies and backsteps too. Now YouTube is the bomb.
Now I think that if the NHL hadn't suspended Avery, I think this probably would have blown over in a couple of days. But by suspending them, it's almost like they're keeping it in the media even more. It's kind of interesting. It's which way should the NHL have handled it? I thought it would have been interesting if they would have suspended him after warmups. And they announced the 18-man roster and two goalies for the game, and mm-hmm. Avery was on it. Now you're suspended, and you guys have to play with 17 players for the game.
That would have been fine. I think that you have to do something about it. If they had let it go, he would have just gotten the message that this is acceptable behavior. Yeah. You can always make the argument that, you know, no news is bad news and everything else. But frankly, the NHL had to do something about this, and I'm really glad that they did.
I am too. And the Dallas Stars say that they're going to do, they would have done something about this. And supposedly they're meeting this week with GMs and coach and just seeing how everything, what everybody thinks they should do. Perhaps it's time to waive him. But what's he have? A 4-year contract at $4 million a year? Is that
4 years, $15.5 million? If you'd seen any of the reactions, the video of the reactions from his teammates, Marty Turco couldn't even lift his eyes up off the ground as he commented on. He was so disgusted.
Oh yeah, he was ashamed.
He was ashamed. Yeah,
Dallas Stars are a classy team, and they even say they're a classy team. But I'm an Avalanche fan, and the Avalanche have at times whipped up on the Stars in the playoffs. And even through all of that, the Stars as an organization have always been a very classy team. The fans have always been all of the fans that I've met have always been very classy fans. You know, this mm-hmm. is just, you have to think that Dallas knew what they were getting into, but this isn't how Dallas operates. Even from somebody who likes to see his team beat Dallas, this isn't how Dallas is.
Oh, well, you won't get any argument about watching my team beat Dallas either. But no, you're absolutely right. And you know, I think the classiest thing they ever did was fire Ken Hitchcock. But you know, aside from that, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, the Stars, Tom Hicks on down. I mean, down to the player, down to even the leaders on that team, with the exception of Morrow and Modotto and Zuboff and Lettinen and whatnot. Through the years, they've always comported themselves with tried to create a very reasonable and professional demeanor. And to have and the problem here is that they hired Brett Hull, and Hull's the one who was behind getting Avery signed and convincing everybody that Avery would behave himself and everything else. And And he Brett Hull made a mistake.
Oh, absolutely. Did he ever?
Wow. Absolutely.
Well, the rest of whatever happens to Avery should hopefully play out this week so it doesn't become a big distraction for not only the rest of the league. As much as I like to see the fodder, I'd certainly like to see this chapter close pretty soon with, you know, and instead of just sweeping under the rug, end with some justice.
Yeah, well, it would be nice to see Dallas just go ahead and waive him and nobody pick him up. And not just because of his salary. Because there are teams in this league who could pick Sean Avery up. They could use him on the ice. But it's to make the statement, no, dude, you don't get to be a part of this club anymore.
If they waived him, perhaps he'd go back to L.A.
They have the cap space for him. Yeah. I know he's not welcome in Buffalo.
Well, let's surprise the masses and keep it in the West for a moment. I want to talk about the Coyotes a little bit, who are struggling at the box office, are struggling financially, and also struggling on the ice. Ilya Bryzgalov got lit up for 7 goals in basically a period and a half. In the first two periods, he lit in, 7-on-17?
Against the Blackhawks.
And the Blackhawks are a streaking team. They're doing great. The youth movement, everything that the Blackhawks have seemed to do has been working. And keeping Hobby Bullen when everybody said trade him was actually a really smart move. At least it looks that way right now. And right now they're but here's the Coyotes, who not only lost 7-1 in an ugly, ugly fashion, but reports are coming out that they're going to lose $25 to $35 million this year, and that's already on top of supposedly losing $20 million a year for the past several years.
Yeah, and I don't see the economics in that situation getting any better. I've talked about this numerous times in the past. I don't see it getting any better. There, you know, it was a housing boom market down in Phoenix, and now the housing boom is busted. Mm-hmm. So you have to think that, you know, it's just natural for that kind of business that was raised on the margin is going to be destroyed on the margin. And it's a shame. What I found interesting was the take that Wyshynski had on why the media is obsessed with this team. I mean, at the end of the day, right now, they're a game under 500. Yeah, they got thrashed for 7-1 by Chicago the other night. But, you know, realistically, they're still only 4 points out of a playoff spot. In the very, very crowded lower 13 in the West, where 9 points separates 13 teams. I'm looking at the I'm looking at the standings right now. So I mean, at the very least, you know, they're good at home, and it seems that, you know, it's like everything else. The team could actually turn a corner, but they really need to turn a corner. Even if they do turn the corner, really, will it matter? Because can anybody in Phoenix afford to go to a hockey game? And that's really the question that you have to ask. And or care enough to go.
I don't think that they do. I think that what everybody's looking towards right now is due north of Phoenix, and that's Las Vegas.
Right.
I mean, just to the side of. Or it's not everybody wants to talk about, well, a lot of people talk about expansion. When they expand, where do they go? Why can't they just take a 200-mile hike and go to Las Vegas and become the Las Vegas Coyotes? And the only thing that I see really holding them back, other than, say, the league-saving face a little bit, is that I didn't realize this until this week. They have a 30-year lease on the building. Mm-hmm. That's insane.
Yep. And that 30-year lease is going to hang over like an albatross around their neck if they can't get it either renegotiated or done away with. I don't know. I mean, who would buy? How could you sell that team at this point? How could, you know, with a 30-year lease at that arena?
I mean, if you couldn't break the lease, and I would think that everybody would want to be, unless you own the arena, I would think everybody would be willing or wanting to renegotiate a lease right now, because considering the economic times, I would think that the only people making money right now may be the arena, and if nobody can afford the tickets to get to the games, that's going to change mighty fast.
Yeah, absolutely, because the arena is making money on the concessions and the parking and everything else, and that's where they're really making their money. And the cut of the ticket sales is one thing, but you've got to put more than 5,000 or 6,000 people in the building to turn that profit and even to pay to turn the lights on and bring the staff in. It's the same thing down in, I heard the report out of I didn't actually watch the game the other night, but Buffalo was in Florida, down in Miami. Another market I've talked about a dozen times. And if there were Rick Jeanneret and Harry Neal mentioned, they said, yeah, well, the announced crowd is something like 11 or 12,000. But if there are 4,000 people in the arena, that's impressive. I mean, Paul Hamilton called it a preseason game or an AHL game. It was, in terms of the crowd, it was sparse. There's nobody going to games.
I know it'll never happen, but I'd love to see some honesty in the numbers of what actual attendance is. I know it'll never happen because otherwise they'd lose a lot of sponsorship that way. You know, if you actually had to admit that you're 3,000 people off per game because you're papering, that'd be brutal.
Or eight in the case of the Coyotes in Florida, they're announcing crowds that are 2.5 times the actual. I mean, paid attendance maybe 13,000, but only 5,000 are going because while they may have bought the tickets back in July when they had money, now they don't have the money for the gasoline and the food to go to the arena to watch the game.
Colorado, I saw it over and over. They would announce the attendance as being a sellout, and you'd look around and you'd be like, well, there's a lot of people who bought tickets who didn't show up and I know that's just the reality. That's what they're saying, but still, it's kind of sad.
It is sad, but I don't know. It's the league can't talk about expansion. Talking about expansion right now is pure hubris and just pure chest beating and whatnot. This league, if it's going to do anything, it's going to contract. While the Canadian media may be obsessed, in the words of Greg Wasinski, with the failure that seems to be happening in Phoenix for whatever reason, and everybody, I really recommend the article that Greg wrote on Saturday. It was outstanding.
We'll throw a link up to it in the post on our site, which is, of course, www.rinkpodcast.com.
Absolutely. And while we may see one or two teams relocate up to Canada where the game is still strong, the truth of the matter is that the NHL could easily contract to 26 teams, and I don't really think anybody would mind, except the people in those markets. Obviously, the people in those markets would mind a lot, and, well, they should, but...
Mm-hmm. I say you contract by two, you move two, and then you see where the chips fall for the next 3 years. Yeah. That's what I would look at myself. I would not want to go wholesale into you know, too much contraction. But I think lopping off two, making another four division league rather than the six that we have now, which I think would help square up the standings a little bit more, you know, than the playoff situation, and go from there. I don't see why not.
Yeah, it would be it's like everything else. It's they don't call it a depression for nothing, or the immortal words of Lou Rockwell. They don't call it a contraction for nothing.
Yeah,
or correction for nothing. And the NHL has expanded, honestly, beyond its sustainable presence at the revenue that it can generate, you know, long term and in the markets that it's currently in. And it only makes sense to reallocate capital and retrench. So it makes any sense.
There's no quick and easy answer to this, I know, but I'm going to throw it at you anyways in the hopes that maybe you understand these things. But has the NHL been fooling itself for the last couple of years as the salary cap has gone up due to the quote unquote revenues going up? Has the NHL just diluted itself, and now that we're in this situation, it's continuing to dilute itself?
Well, I mean, it's all a product of large wholesale credit and monetary expansion, which I don't want to. I mean, this is really not an appropriate discussion here. But if you understand it from that, if you look at it from that perspective, that it was built with a foundation on a house of sand, and the money and finance and credit being created being the sand to build the foundation with, that, you know, eventually the house has to come tumbling down.
Yeah.
And it's because it's not sustainable to live like that. You can keep, you know, shoring up the outside of it, but eventually, you know, enough of the sand is going to leak out and it's going to go away, and there's not going to be enough. You're not going to be able to pay people or keep up the illusion anymore, and that's just the way it is. That's the best analogy I can come up with off the top of my head. There was a really good book written about economic bubbles and stuff. I can't remember the name of it. I wish I could. I can't. But I've seen citations from it where the author talked about all sorts of bubbles happening in these times, and sports salaries is one of them. That's something you're going to have to consider seriously in contracting. It's created in the final phase of the mania, of the monetary mania, and it's going to be the first thing to really crash. And we're seeing in all the leagues. The WNBA is going to be contracting people. All the minor sports are going to be style sports are going to be in trouble. So women's soccer, women's basketball. I expect the NBA and even the NFL are going to have trouble.
We've already seen our first minor league hockey team fall off the map mid-season with the closing of the Augusta Lynx, which is right. Unfortunate from the ECHL.
Right. And, teams in the ECHL come and go all the time, though. You're absolutely right. We're going to see things like that. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see the naming rights on arenas drop like a stone. We're going to see, not in markets like Toronto, where Brian Burke had $18 million a year to be their GM because they can't spend the money on player salary, so they spend it on the GM. But you're going to see it everywhere.
Yeah.
And the segue into this, I saw a report today out of Buffalo that the big news in Buffalo is that there's a report that Jim Kelly's going to file in a magazine there locally that Tom Golisano secretly has the team for sale out there, which, they vehemently deny. But the undercurrent, of course, is that the salary cap and the revenues and everything have moved far beyond what Bettman had promised Golisano they would be when he bought the team, is hockey, even in a hockey mad town like Buffalo, sustainable at $50 to $52 million a year, even with subsidies and player salaries? And it's very possible that something like that is happening.
Well, how long have they owned has this ownership owned the Sabres at this point?
Since I think it was early 2003 is when I think the deal was finalized.
Wow. That isn't long. Yeah.
No, but but that's funny about it. I'm not sure that I take really very much stock in it, frankly. There's a lot of particulars in terms of the Golisano's presence in that part of the state and the amount of money he's invested there, and there's a variety of things that he's started out there, political action committees and foundations and stuff, and the Sabres are all part of his grant, part of his plan to help revitalize Western New York, I think. But so I don't really believe that. I almost believe that it's that Kelly might have talked to somebody who has more money than brains and maybe is in preliminary talks with trying to offer Golisano too much money for the Sabres, and he has to at least entertain it. I mean, let's put it this way, James. I know that I don't really want to sell my house in North Florida that I built with my own two hands, but if somebody came by and said, hey, I'll give you $750,000 for it, I'd have to think about it.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't think – I can't imagine that a franchise that's had such a good resurgence lately. I mean, they've done so well in the last several years since the lockout, basically, even missing the playoffs last year. They still get great crowds. They have great support. The Buffalo Sabres are like, the Blackhawks this year are the Sabres of a couple of years ago. People are coming back to the team. I would want to hold on to an asset like that.
I would think so, but at the same time, they did lose a little bit of money last year, and salaries are higher than they were a year ago. But I still think they qualify for revenue sharing. Maybe not all the pots of revenue sharing because those rules are really, really murky. I don't think they're in that situation yet. But I can tell you that if they don't make the playoffs this year,
it's going to be ugly.
And the salary cap stays the same. The Sabres are going to be at the salary floor next year.
Yeah.
By bare necessity. And because the salary floor is what? $44 million or $42 million or something like that? So
$10 million off probably from what the LA Kings have. Yeah. To go from keep holding on to assets that you want to probably trading away assets, Ilya Kovalchuk. Everybody's talking about trading Kovalchuk. Here's I keep looking at the Atlanta Thrashers, and they were in a bad situation with the whole Danny Heatley, Snyder incident, and had to get rid of their 1A, 1B player of their two big players, and now they're talking about getting rid of the next one, you know, the second player. And it's kind of sad for Atlanta that they just can't hold on to talent. They also they had to trade away Hossa when he was hot. You know, for basically prospects, you know, people who they weren't quite sure if it were going to work out at all or not. It's unfortunate for Atlanta that they just can't seem to have much to build on.
They're caught between disinterested ownership and incompetent management.
Mm-hmm.
So you have disinterested ownership that, you know, they're one of the teams that's actually easily portable, quoting Wyshynski earlier, because the arena is actually, Phillips Arena is actually owned by the investor group that owns the Thrashers, so there's no lease.
Mm-hmm.
So they could move, they could just, you know, say, okay, well, we don't want to put the Thrashers, we don't want them in the building anymore. We can substitute, you know, Shania Twain's going on tour again, and we'll put her back in there, or whatever, I don't know. And they can go to Calgary, and we can put a second team in Calgary again, so we can have two teams from Atlanta having moved to Calgary. I don't know. But they're portable in that respect, as opposed to Phoenix, who's kind of almost locked into that scenario. At least by contract. No, Atlanta is caught between that ownership that really isn't really interested, and because of that, they haven't fired Don Waddell. And this man's made more and better in terms of ineptitude, on the ineptitude scale, moves with personnel than, I mean, his moves are nearly Milbury-esque in their ineptitude. And if they have to move Kovalchuk now, I mean, all I'm thinking to myself is, you know, how many top 10 picks do you have to get before you'll finally, you know, gel or finally decide you want to build a team?
Absolutely. And this is a team this is an ownership group that also owns the basketball team. And it seems like they just kind of tacked on a hockey team because that's what you do. You have a building, you have a basketball team, you might as well fill the other dates that you don't have filled up with a hockey team. There are fans in Atlanta. I don't think that's what they signed on for.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I don't believe for a second that hockey can't work in Atlanta. It's just not working with the current people in charge of the franchise.
Yeah. No, I agree. I wish that they would get somebody who could work with. Last thing I kind of wanted to hit on was just quickly with Radim Vrbata decides to go to the Czech Republic, basically asked to be waived and finish up the year in the Czech Republic. He's so far off his game, but really, I'm having a hard time blaming him. Look at
Would you want to be playing for the Tampa Bay Lightning right now?
I wouldn't want to be playing for the Tampa Bay Lightning. I guess they didn't want to play for Melrose. Now they don't want to play for the current situation. They want to not play for the ownership? I mean, at this point, I think the Lightning are going to trade for every player in the NHL and waive them. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a sad thing. I got a commenter at Fanhouse this morning who took me to task for talking about the Sabres in their win over Tampa the other night. And he's a Tampa fan. He's like, Tampa's won six games. Why don't you talk about them? They're a mess. Like, it's killing me how far this team is. What he was saying is it's killing him how far this team has fallen since they won a cup. I, of course, am thinking to myself, yeah, but at least you have one.
A cup doesn't make up for everything. I mean, a cup is great, but it isn't a Band-Aid for having, you know, falling straight to hell for the next however many years.
Yeah, okay, whatever, fine. I'll agree with that once I have one.
All right. I'm just saying, like, who would have thought that Hobby Bullen would be the glue of the team, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, but he was at the top of his game when he won that thing. And then as soon as he left,
everything went to hell.
Of course, because everything starts with goaltending. Yep. Well, because Tortorella wanted to play this. Tortorella's system that he had in Tampa when they won the Cup was very similar to what Ruff and Regier wanted to do when coming out of Alka. Two-man, forecheck. And the same thing what LaViolette had in Carolina when they won the Cup that year. Hard two-man, forecheck, skate hard, roll four lines, hang your goaltender out to dry, and you know, hope that you can win 4-3. I mean, play up tempo, high pressure hockey. You had a top flight goaltender on the top of his game, and they could play it. You can't substitute that with Marc Denis, who is a competent goaltender, but you know, he needs an organized team in front of him. I mean, when he was standing on his head in Columbus, you got to remember Columbus was collapsing five guys into the box and praying all the shots were coming from the outside, so you could put up gaudy totals and gaudy statistics and you know, win games 2-1, 3-2, and you know, and look like a better goaltender than he really was. And you know, and it starts to fall apart from there. You can't win. You know, you can't win without goaltending.
You mentioned LaViolette. It's funny because Sean Avery dropped his bomb, and then right after that, LaViolette gets fired, and it was almost like background noise. Coach getting fired. It was almost like, yeah, okay, that was nice, but ooh, look at the glossy Sean Avery thing over here.
Well, and what does Carolina do? Talk about another. Yeah, even marginally managed team. They bring back Paul Maurice as a, you know, what is he? He's just somebody to bring in there again. I mean, because he knows the organization, and Jim Rutherford knows that, you know, he's like, Paul Maurice is like everybody's little whipping boy to get a job. I wouldn't take that job again after the way things went down. I don't know. If I was Paul Maurice, I wouldn't take that job again. It just makes no sense to me. I don't know. Yeah. And he's not their long-term solution. He knows it, and everybody else. He's like, he's going to be, you know, this month's Denny Savard.
Yeah. Well, and shortly after the lockout, the Carolina Hurricanes changed their AHL affiliate to the Albany River Rats, kind of swapped up with the New Jersey Devils, and also took on Colorado as a second affiliate. It's just hard to see that they really have a good minor league system going, where you maybe have a coach waiting in the wings and stuff like that. You know, looking at the Capitals, they had the success. They've had success because of that. You know, they had a coach ready to step up, and that's what happened. He wins Coach of the Year. It's great. I don't see Carolina in that same situation.
Yeah, I didn't know that Carolina was doing the dual affiliation thing.
They were until just like a year and a half ago, and Colorado split. But still, it's just, it's the same thing that hurt Tampa Bay when Tampa Bay, after they won the Cup, they had really piss poor minor league affiliate. Same deal with Edmonton, who were splitting their players amongst six different AHL affiliates. If you don't take the minors seriously, you're not going to have a team this year, in the next couple of years. That's just the new rule. That's just the new NHL.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and it's the dual affiliation thing doesn't work. We had it in Buffalo for 3 years, and it destroyed, and it's helped to stunt the growth of a lot of prospects on both for Florida and for the Sabres. So yeah, no, dual affiliation is terrible. It's one of the situation in Edmonton was one of the main reasons why I kept, you know, calling him K-Lo and not Kevin Lowe, because he would refuse to acknowledge the fact that you can't buy a hockey team. And his situation with the, when he put the Vanek offer sheet and then the Penner offer sheet out, he was just trying to bandage over the fact that he wasn't willing to spend a couple million dollars a year to stock an AHL team, which is what he needed to do in order to take all of these gifted players that he's been drafting and develop them properly. Because if you look at Edmonton's history up until very recently, their first-round draft pick track record was abysmal. It was just abysmal. They would draft these kids, and they would, you know, Edmonton, where first-round draft picks go to die. And you can't build a sustainable team without a good AHL affiliate.
You can't. And, you know, it's funny, we were talking about Brian Burke getting $18 million thrown at him, and because they can't spend it on players. But at the same time, they've got an AHL affiliate, the Toronto Marlies, right there in Toronto, and they aren't throwing their money at that. And that just seems like the smartest place if they want to put a winning team on the ice in the next few years.
And to bring this right back around again, who was the guy who did a great job bringing up what marginal talent the Leafs had drafted in the Marlies, with the Marlies, which was Paul Maurice. He did a nice job down there with them, with getting them as much out of the players that they had drafted as he could. None of these guys were high quality. You know, none of their high draft picks were really high-end players, which was part of the problem. Because, I mean, you know, Toronto was competitive for a lot of years and getting a lot of low first round, if not giving up their first round picks. So it's not like they had the thing had the Marlies stocked with a lot of talent. But they should be throwing at it, money at it. You're absolutely right. The Detroit Red Wings do it. I can't understand why Toronto doesn't do it.
Yeah, it just seems like the smartest way to go with any team at this point. You know, just build up your minor leagues. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say salary cap or no salary cap, revenue sharing or no revenue sharing. You consistently win by being able to develop players from within, bring them into the organization from an early age, grow them, and then supplant and support them with people from the outside.
I'd love to be able to argue with you, but I just can't. You're absolutely right.
Great.
Well, cool, Tom. Thank you so much for this week. This week, also a little special treat at the end of the podcast. I got to go to an Indianapolis Ice game at the Pepsi Coliseum here in Indianapolis. Surprisingly, Indianapolis has a rich history of hockey. Of course, Wayne Gretzky played his first 8 games as a professional hockey player with the Indianapolis Racers of the WHA. But
you're right.
I was also able to record a little bit at the game, and this is what it sounds like when the Indiana Ice score a goal. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink. You can find my blog at jerseysandhockeylove.com, and also I've been guest posting this week over at Puck the Media. Steve Lepore has been away, so you can find that at puckthemedia.wordpress.com. You can find Tom's work over at nhl.fanhouse.com. You can find The Rink, of course, at www.rinkpodcast.com. You can send us an email at rink@rinkpodcast.com, or you can call us at 845-704-RINK. It's 845-704-7465. We'll see you next week at The Rink.